Good afternoon. My name is Thomas Neubauer. I'm actually having multiple hats on. One of them is that I'm actually the CEO and co-founder of a company called Demetor, where we're producing a software solution called Airborne RF. And that explains a little bit on, you know, what we are doing, because all of these drone operations and PV loss scale-up capabilities, they require one critical point that has not been mentioned so far. They require connectivity in the airspace. No connectivity, no use space. That's not from me, that's from the German government. You must have connectivity because you need to have a pilot in command, and as the pilot can no longer sit on the drone, you need to have a remote infrastructure that allows you to have a connectivity in the airspace. So, and in order to get an approval for flights, you need to know where in the airspace you will have sufficient connectivity, like you need to know wind and weather before the flight. And we are providing that information. From telecom operators, from satellite providers, where to switch. That is one critical aspect, and I will come to that later on, why that is so important, from safety, approval, operational, and mission critical. And the second point, from telecom networks, that is super interesting for drone operations, is where are people on the ground at any given point in time? Because what you're currently using, what you're currently using for SORA applications, which is called census data, is as useful as an ash tree on a motorcycle when it comes to the information where people are. It tells you where people are registered. But if you ask somebody from the Netherlands, you find many people are registered at the coastline in their offices, but they're not living there, and certainly they're not there during winter. So that is another information that telecom providers can deliver, and we help bringing that information into aviation systems. That is what we do.
Amazing. And why Thomas is here, because he also have a lot of collaboration with first responders and police forces, you know, so we will touch base on those topics. So I would like to ask our next speaker, if we change a slide, to introduce himself. And we also going to have a short video, you know, how the Mossos, the Squadra, using drones. So please introduce yourself.
Okay. Thanks, Esther. Thanks, my fellow speaker. Thanks to all the audience. I'm very happy to be here to explain what we do. Here we have a lot of business makers, enterprises that make solutions. I am a user. I am of systems. I am police in Mossos d'Esquadra since... It's okay, the sound? It's okay? Since 21, started a unit of drones, and me, myself, and 12 more people started the unit, and we work as in safety sense in the world of police, doing flying drones. We are drone pilots, and well, we can speak later what we do, but maybe we can show the video. I think could be interesting not hearing what I say. With images, what we do.
The other one. Other one could be.
this one is Esther. This one is when something special in Barcelona, where we work, is a system named Kupel. This video is about Kupel. This one is what we do. Yeah. Okay, then explain. There are, in summary, some actions that we do. Well, we work most part of our job in the city, the big city in Barcelona. Sometimes in the darkness, the people who attacks or make protests or attacks police is hide in the beach where we can, when they are feel safe. Then with thermal camera, we point to the order public patrols where they are. Now I think you can see how they appear. These images we are sending, we work sending the images to a control center in real time. Also, we make support to special teams, squads, in their entries or their attacks to organized crime. And we work a lot with demonstrations or large human concentrations of people. In these cases, we have problems, Thomas, with connectivity. When we are sending images with 4G system, all the people are using the same communication tower. Then the tower is busy, is saturated, and we have problems. We can talk now. And a lot of job with drugs, with marijuana in Spain is illegal, and then we have a lot of problems with them. We also work in natural disasters, helping the rescue operations, demonstrations, protests, attacks against police, all that stuff. And also races or charity for medical research or for financial for medical research. You are understanding me? Thank you.
Yeah, and just I think it's important to mention, how big is your department focused on drones now? You mentioned me, you have 12 people only focused on drones at the department.
We are 12. We work in three groups. One commander, it's my case, with three more cops. Last day I was talking, explaining me how to say, we are big victims of our success. Now, there is no operation. Thank you. there is no operation in Catalonia with no drones. And we started 12 and we are 12. We started with some equipment and we have the same, maybe not, maybe a little more, but we are growing now and are going to multiplicate our numbers of persons and material and devices.
That's pretty impressive. You know, he says there is no operation in Catalonia without drones. 5 years ago, I would tell this to someone, they would laugh on me, right? Like literally laugh on me. Wow, congratulations for this honesty. So Thomas, you are working with the German police as well, if I heard well. And so how do German colleagues do, you know, regarding drones, and what's the experience in Germany?
Well, one of the key things that we wanted to demonstrate or what we want to do is to automate processes. So we have, for example, this year at the European Police Congress, we have showcased the following situation that you have an emergency call coming in, the control center actually having equipped all the gear to actually automatically dispatch a drone, to actually have the drone delivered to the place where it should actually take the most important information, which is video and sensor data, and then transmit that information back to the mission control and redistribute that to the other stakeholders that are probably emergency services en route or, you know, people from the other side of the case. So it's all about the automation of the operation. And for that, you need to consider all sorts of data sources and capabilities. And if you think about it that way, that a drone is essentially delivering, we heard about people today, we heard about parcels and medical goods yesterday, but the biggest business case that is immediately there is the delivery of data. And for that, you need to have a digital infrastructure in the airspace, and the digital infrastructure is really built today with cellular infrastructure for the ground operation, but because of the nature of the how high you're allowed to fly, it works pretty well. But not everywhere and not always, so it's time dependent and area dependent. For example, I could even talk without a microphone now, because you're all in silent mode. That sort of population during the night. The same crowd, half an hour earlier upstairs, I could not even have talked to Esther because of interference from everybody. And that is exactly the same thing that happens with a drone or a mobile phone if it's operating on the ground or if it's in 100 meter altitude where it has visibility to 50, 60 different cell towers. So that is exactly the situation. These networks are getting interference limited up in the airspace. And I assume whenever you are using drones, there's some sort of an emergency or a crowd maybe. And the crowd may be using a mobile phone. I know that from my 15-year-old. They're using it all the time on high data rate services. And these high data rate services, like you have been communicating up there, generate interference. So you can mitigate that. You can fight it. But first of all, you need to know about it. And secondly, the aviation systems should also know about it, because you're also not flying into a weather front. You're not flying into a storm if you know about it. So that's the same principle of what we are doing with connectivity. We are delivering, for example, with a large telecom provider in Germany with the name of Vodafone. They're working with the police centers, with the command and control centers to actually deliver the connectivity information that is, on one hand, can be forecasted. How will it be if I fly there in the next 2 hours? But also the live information about the network at any given point in time into the air traffic management systems, a UTM drone management system, as an additional data layer. And with having that knowledge available, they can automatically dispatch the drones for flying from A to B. It's not always the direct path that actually, you know, provides all the connectivity. It may be advantageous if you go a slightly detour, but with that, with the knowledge, you will actually arrive there, because otherwise you risk that if you're losing connectivity, the automated return to home functions are triggered that terminate your mission. So that is why this additional information is available. And historically, obviously, aviation had nothing to do with telecoms. Switch off your mobile phone, sort of the negative. And now it's becoming an important thing, because it's practically speaking the only and best available resource for providing connectivity into the lower airspace. So that is what we're doing there to automate these processes so that, as you mentioned, 12 people, it's a one-on-one, it's a one-to-many and an automated process that they want to do, because some of these departments in Germany, they have about 100 drones operational in their departments. But they're limited by the physical resources of people, and it's not the best use of tax money to actually have policemen watch drones. It's not.
Wow. So, you know, Thomas, I think it's a complex matter, you know, what you're explaining here. But, like, I would like to understand your own perspective on it. And I think what is very important to mention that if Johan doesn't use the drone, we can go home. You know, we can all go home, right? So let's face the truth. You know, if you as a user are not happy with the solution, you know, or not satisfied, or it doesn't give you advantage, you know, we can all come up with these beautiful solutions, you know, but it will not work for long term. So for first, what I want to understand, Johan, I think, what are your biggest challenges with drones currently? And of course, reacting on Thomas' sentences, automation is something what you need, because you mentioned me at the break, your problem is still you need to go there with the drone to the crime. So you're still using that one person at the crime. You know, you cannot do the mission from your office. The police guy need to go still. Where is the criminal, you know, with the drone, right? So automation challenges, that's a two topic I would like to understand.
Okay. A lot of things you're asking. And the last part you are talking about is what you're explaining. We will talk it. We do a lot of different kind of missions. One of them is the fight against, for example, marijuana fields, against the drugs, crime organizations. Then, years ago, we sent the helicopter, but the helicopter have a problem. It's big, it's expensive, it's easy to see, and more things. I don't know. It's safe for people who are there if they don't have an accident, but are discovered. The unit of drones, we go there. Catalonia is a small area, but sometimes we stay 4 hours driving to arrive to an area to make our operation. We are so close sometimes to that people. We are using the same road. We are in the same forest. Then I know it exists automatization systems, but I don't see in my job. Someday we will send the drone from I don't know where. It's a matter of autonomy also, because the drone has to start next to the point, I think.
So what are the biggest challenges? One of the challenges, you still need to have the police officer drive 2-3 hours, go there with the drone, and send up the drone, right? So that's one of the challenges. And what other challenges do you as a user face?
Well, the other one is, like Thomas was explaining, is communications. Most of our job, a part of that kind of missions I was talking about in rural places, most of our job is in the city, in the big city, Barcelona, 1.5 million of inhabitants. I think every day or every 2 days we have something, a football match, a live concert, a protest, an attack to the police, a political action, I don't know. When it happens, it's easy to have thousands of persons together. And then we go to there and we send images to a control center where we have our chiefs, our directors, our managers, and they decide what we have to do, what the patrols have to do, and they guide the operation. Then all that people are using the same tower of communication than me, 4G. Sometimes we don't be able to send the images. We are talking after, before. We are supposed to have a reserve of line of communication. It doesn't happen. Sometimes the images doesn't arrive.
So I would like to ask the audience to ask questions. You know, I think it's a really good panel to ask the police and Thomas regarding cellular connectivity. But Thomas, my main question, until you know, we put up the Slidos, and you know, you can all submit yours. Is there a solution for that today? What is the challenge, you know, in Catalonia? Is it possible when a Catalonian football team plays, you know, we use a different spectrum for drones? So, you know, if Messi, is the Messi there, right? Or if he's making a goal and 200 people, like, taking photos of it, the whole drone operation is still going to go. There is a solution for it, right?
So there is a solution in the works. One of that is there are multiple possibilities. One of the things that you mentioned is there a dedicated spectrum. A dedicated spectrum is super expensive. So what people are trying to do is use the existing spectrum but have more intelligent infrastructure. And 5G, with all the promises and so on, has one particular functionality that will be very useful that is called network slicing. And the network slicing is the following thing, just for, as I guess there is many aviation people. Think about a pizza, and that's where it comes from. It's like one, it's the same pizza, it's the same spectrum, it's the same infrastructure, but there's one slice that you can actually carve out and make it independent from the rest of the network. So you can essentially, no matter how many thousand people are, I think they are crying in front of the stadium because Messi is no longer there in Barcelona. But the key point is you make it independent from all this interference. It's like if, you know, everybody is shouting and we have a direct communication line that is independent from everybody else. That is a functionality that is introduced with 5G and will then be retrofitted to 4G so that we have it in a wide area coverage and wide area availability. And that in itself will trigger another key aspect on top of the automation, which is really to do beyond visual line of sight operation, because we have seen, for example, with some partners in the US, one of the aspects that I've learned is gone on arrival. I didn't know that term until they explained to me. They have an emergency or an accident being reported into the control station, And then you have resources deployed. You have a police officer, a car, potentially a fire truck also deployed there. And when they arrive, the scene has cleared. There's nobody there anymore. They have gone on arrival. And the problem with that is the cost of infrastructure deployed for that. You need to get resources. You need to get trucks. You need to get people who are very difficult to find. And having a drone being automatically dispatched for a real beyond visual line of sight drone operation, I learned that they do reduce the response time just dramatically from, you know, tens of minutes into 2 to 5 minutes on where you have a first image, where you have a first aspect. And for the telecoms, this is just the sensor. That sensor happens to be non-static. It flies there and delivers data to another place. And from there, it redistributes that data to yet another set of mobile recipients. So it's a classical telecom service. And that's why many of the telcos are very interested to actually build such mobile sensor networks and use their existing infrastructure and apply that to airspace applications called BVLOS drones.
Fantastic. Thank you, Thomas. So I'm getting jealous of Johan because it seems like he's the most popular person today, you know, based on these questions. It seems like you're all of them for you. I think this is a good one. I'm picking that one, sorry. What are the lessons learned in using drones in urban environment that might be useful for the future civilian drone businesses? So if you are operating in Barcelona, you know, what lessons you learned so far, you know, using the drone in city in Barcelona? And is there positive, negative lessons learned during these few years? Yeah.
Okay, I will try to answer. It's not the same as a public service or a private operator. What we do in our job is minimize all that kind of problems that we could make to the people. We work always on most of our job with a lot of people, with crowds, with demonstrations, and we have to minimize all the possibilities of accident. We use parachute. We always fly with an angle, not in the zenithal position, not in vertical position, respect the ground. You understand? If we have an accident, our drone have to fall in a roof, no, to the crowd. It's what we have to ask to private operators. Maybe they want to do images also to when happens something, a lot of people or a demonstration, they have to use the same rules that we use. We are police, but we accomplish all the rules and all the communications. We do flight plan. We work as a private operation.
So you also apply for SORA?
We have a SORA study, a security study. We have a standard coordination that works forever. We renew every certain time, and we do a flight plan. We also have tactical version in which is urgent. It's a risk that we have to work at that time, and it's only a telephone call to the tower.
So one more question, and after I see a lot of questions for you, Thomas, as well. So you're getting, you know, there is a very interesting question. Do you do anything to reassure the public that the drone you put up is a police drone? Does it look like any other? So I assume, do you paint it blue and put a police sign on it? And I can see your drone's police sign. You know, if you met him, he has a drone on his uniform. So do you put something on the drone so people know it's a police drone?
Okay, I explain to you. Today I'm with this suite here, but most of our job is in street clothes because we have to move between the demonstration, the attacks, the people, the angry people. Then we have to move to change the roof because the demonstration is moving. Then the drone. The drone in urban situations, the drone usually is not seen. It's not here. In rural situations, we have to take care about the wind. The wind takes the sound, and it's easy to see and too easy to be here. In urban situations, it's seen if we want to be seen. We put lights, we put sound, when we think that the fact that the drone is there is going to calm the situation. If we don't want to be seen, usually I think we get it.
Amazing, so I hope it that works. So the next question for Thomas, your practical experience, do you think cellular availability and continuity is high enough for reliable UAS tracking? So can cellular connectivity be a part of the tracking? I guess remote ID probably what they wanna know.
So the answer is definitely yes. We have seen that even today's existing technologies is for most of the cases, in most of the environments, actually applicable. Of course, there's always, you know, there's two real key aspects. Number one, how about redundancy? And because redundancy is one of the fundamentals in aviation, so what we do, we see, for example, requests from the ANSBs and the CAAs about having redundant information about in which places do we have more than one telco connectivity that solves one of the aspects with regard to the availability and integrity, because if you are using your mobile phone, if you take that and call 112, your mobile phone will connect to the best available telco provider, not to the one where you have your SIM card in. So we expect similar capabilities also with safety critical aspects, and that will have a lot of impact, of course, to the reliability and availability. The other one is, what happens to those places where you don't have cellular? There are places where you don't have cellular. And the answer to that is, well, it depends on the type of mission that you have. In some cases, when we work with people who do long haul inspections, satellite fallback may be an option. In other places, there is no. So you can, what is typically in subject to the ground risk, and I'll come to that also in a second, cellular is providing for the lower airspace the best option. In many cases, we have now dual transmits solutions that fall back onto a satellite. We work with some customers who do that. Especially if you do have power grid inspection, I think one of the next sessions will cover that. But for most application cases, cellular is built out pretty well. Not everywhere, but many of those things have to do with talking about the interference from one level further up before. If you construct the aircraft with a proper antenna system, you can actually do a lot of miracles. You can mitigate interference and you can extend range. So we are working with some equipment manufacturers, drone manufacturers, to actually take that already into account. So there's a lot of activity going on, and also with which frequency, which spectrum can be used in the airspace. There's a lot of activity going on to see how we can use lower frequencies with very long range. And because we are flying up in 100 meters or about, we have connections 40, 50 kilometers away that are actually still good enough. And at the same time, that's a challenge because you don't want to be connected to cells so far off. So it's, but in most cases, we have done, for example, hundreds of flight hours with authorities in the US, for example, to understand and characterize what does a cellular infrastructure have to satisfy in order to be applicable for C2 link, for identification and operation also with broadband services up in the airspace.
Amazing. So the minimum, you know, requirements, right?
Yeah, there are minimum requirements. Just one more sentence. I'm one of the hats I have is I'm leading a work group in something that is called ACGA, lovely acronym. aerial connectivity joint activity, which is a combination of the telecom providers as a whole, as an industry on one hand, and the global aviation community represented by the global UTM association. Because on one hand, the UTM side, the drone operation side, wants to understand and know how they can actually utilize the data. And for the telecoms, it is a business value to understand how they can utilize their infrastructure. And that is a global activity with partners from Australia, Japan, Europe, North America. I think we also have somebody from Latin America and Africa. So it's really a global unit where they are trying to coordinate exactly those questions with the regulators, with those who make the requirements, and the standardization bodies. So it's closing the gap between those two industries.
Amazing. So I must ask these questions. I think someone is in Barcelona speeded a little bit. I want to know if they use drones for speed tickets. So tell us the truth. Do you check the speeding cars with drones?
It's not true.
It's not true.
It's possible to do.
Don't worry.
Who is asking?
Who is exactly? Actually, four people speeded in Barcelona recently, based on the slide. You know, four, not one.
I explain what we do with traffic units. It's more interesting than a fine. In accidents, we do multiple photographs, and we mix together. We make a 3D model and the traffic investigations of accidents. I don't understand the name. They do their research, they study of an accident, especially when it's dead persons in the accidents. It's what we do with traffic.
That makes sense. And the other question is, I don't like these political things of like China and not China. You know, I'm very far from this. I'm not going to ask this one. I'm going to reshape the question. You know, it's my event. I can do that, right? But most of your fleet is DJI, obviously one of the biggest manufacturers currently at the market. Or you also mix with other manufacturers, like Skydio, or, you know, there are plenty in Europe, you know. I'm sure probably in Spain there are a few great manufacturers as well. Is it a mixture or is it only, you know, DJI?
We have a manufacturer. Before the unit, my police force has had drones. That time were manufactured, but now DJI it's difficult to in the line enterprise line is difficult to have another. It's coming. It's arrived. Are going to arrive new drones. One of some of them are from other brands. But the most part of what we use is the enterprise line of DJI.
I mean, that's a clear answer. I mean, like we know that a lot of the police force is using, you know, it's business as usual as of today. Let's face the truth. I think my last question for Thomas, and after I need to close this discussion, unfortunately. But what is the good news? Hospitals and industrial applications are coming, so, you know, not only the police. So, Thomas, my last question here, actually, I would like that you are adding satellite connectivity to sources of connectivity, especially for oceanic missions. Do you see the need for SATCOM, but for land missions? So it's about how you collaborate with SATCOM companies, and maybe you can also have your final remarks with that after, you know. Yeah.
So the answer is yes. There's if we are, for example, looking into, I take Austria as an example, as I'm coming from Austria, transalpine power line inspections. We do a lot of tourism in the Alps, but there are places where we just do not have cellular. And the way to communicate and the way to control drones there is to have some sort of a satellite fallback. That is one of the possibilities. Another one, take any, you know, areas where there is searching for missing people in the mountains or in areas where you have, you know, drones are a perfect aspect for that. And, you know, what would be really bad if you're losing connectivity and you 2 hours later the drone comes back and said, yeah, we found him, but unfortunately it's 2 hours too late. So you need to, that's what I mentioned, you know, flying the drone safely is a safety critical aspect. providing live feedback to mission control is a mission critical aspect. And we see even from drone delivery companies, for example, it becomes an operational aspect, because if losing connectivity results in a return to home, well, you probably use that delivery service once, but never again. So it's an operational aspect, and therefore satellite always has to be some sort of fallback. There's some discussions on future 5G coming from satellite. It is always more seen as a much more complementary to terrestrial rather than the operational purpose, but also for land use, it makes perfect sense.
Thank you, Thomas. And my last question to Johan. I mean, like, this is very good. I don't know who asked, can you close the sky? I mean, this last one, I mean, when there is an accident, are you capable to close a part of the airspace for accident investigation? So can you call the Spanish Civil Aviation Authority and say, close that part of the airspace because there is a big accident? Is it possible? And if yes, how? And the other question, what do you think about this? What's your final perspective about using drones, and what's the future should look like as a police officer?
Two questions.
I talk a lot. Lorenzo always say to me.
The first one. Well, you know the concept NOTAM. It's know it. NOTAM, when it's a area that restricted to for something. We use that kind of figure, but how I said, most of our job is in Barcelona. Barcelona is closed for private operators. Usually we are the only force operating in that area, but we always make any kind of communication. If we have time, we do a flight plan. If we don't have time, we contact with the tower. We always say our position to the tower.
And any final remarks? As a user, how do you want to see in 5 years drones? Fully autonomous? Or are you happy as it is now? Or what's your expectation from us?
It's a fight against me. I think it should be more open. For my job, it's better to work alone. And I don't need the space open because I can use it now. But I understand that it's the way it's going to be more open. Private operators could fly. I don't know with your space, with the system that you want, but I think in 5 years I see the sky full of devices doing things.
Would be good. I would double my business. That's a good end, you know, sentence. Thank you so much, Thomas and Johan, for this great panel.